we can talk about what we do, because a lot of people see a brand, and our brand is knives, obviously, but like we don't always talk about that we're the manufacturer 100% end-to-end, which is not a given in the knife space. Mm-hmm. So that we can talk about. I'll try to talk friendly, but if I start cussing about logistics companies that masquerade
I fucking hate company. The post office, so.
Yeah, don't even get us started on the post office right now. You don't want to know.
No. Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Dude.
You don't want to know. There's like bags of mail missing.
Ignorance is bliss.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
And we just sent about $50,000 worth of inventory across the country to get processed for coatings. And every time I think about it, I'm just like, I got to go. I can't think about what's in the mail right now. It's just not healthy.
Mm-hmm. It's not. Yeah, I was going to say it's not healthy.
No.
Yeah, it's not a fun time.
Otherwise, wherever you guys want to go, we can talk.
And you can find your knives in any normal gas station, 7-Eleven,
so
on the counter.
Sheets, we hate Wawa, so if you're Northeastern, screw that. Bucky's carries our entire line, though. Okay. So
they're always in stock there.
They're always in stock at Bucky's. That's fantastic, because I love me some gas station knives, man.
Who doesn't like
That's where the obsession started. But I am, once again, a disclaimer, I am not a knife guy. Anyway, I think we can roll it in if you would like to.
Yeah. So, welcome to the Big Tech Soreness Podcast. We appreciate you listening, watching, however you're consuming this piece of content. I'm Ike. Y'all probably already knew that, hopefully. We got Ian. We got Chris. And then today, we're joined with the Dauntless crew. So, guys, thank y'all so much for coming up.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. No, we're really excited to be able to sit down and, like, you know, pick your brains about some stuff in the knife world. Like, I've been following y'all for a minute or two now, and seems like y'all are doing some good stuff.
Appreciate that.
Yeah. Working hard.
Happy to be here. Happy to talk.
So y'all, like all my y'all are knife guys, right? I mean, I take it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we're knife guys. I guess we'll give a real quick background.
Yeah.
Chris and I are machinists.
Oh yeah. I guess I could have. Yeah. They have names, by the way.
I'm Zach.
Yeah, so we got Zach, we got Chris from Dauntless. My apologies.
No worries.
Okay, so I guess we could start with a little introduction.
1983, you were born.
84.
Oh! Close, I'm so close.
Do I look older than I am?
I don't know, you got a little bit
The beard is hard, the beard can be very deceiving.
I turned 40 this year, I will turn 40 this
Happy
year,
birthday,
so.
Early.
Early, yeah, it's a bit early. So.
Like November 23rd or?
27th.
What, really?
Holy shit! Where
the hell did that come from?
They're are you guys stalking you.
And your blood type is AB positive?
What, do we do, go the, around with that?
The BTO podcast turned dark.
This is a knife gun podcast where we guess each other's PII, you know?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So anyway.
I don't know where I was going. Oh, yeah. Chris and I are machinists, and we worked in the gun industry for a long time. Well, Department of Defense and stuff like that. And then when we got into private sector, the gun industry, and we got tired of working for other people. And so we shook the piggy bank back in 2017. Bought a machine off of Craigslist, put it in my garage, and said, we're going to get to that. And we were both working full-time, and then we were working full-time for Dauntless at the same time. And after a few years, or after a year or so, Chris went full-time with Dauntless, and a couple years after that, I went full-time with Dauntless, and here we are. We make a bunch of knives in a facility in North Carolina.
Yep.
Yeah, so.
Nice.
Yeah, long and short of it.
When did you get your first knife?
My first knife. Okay. I was probably 9 years old. I got it at a yard sale.
Nice.
And someone told me it was really dull and I couldn't cut anything with it. And then I tried to stab my sister. But in like a playful way, because I thought it can't hurt anybody. I know I tried to stab myself sister playfully. So I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
It's not good optics. So I lost that knife immediately.
Yeah. I got confiscated.
The police took it.
Fast forward to 18 when I got out of jail.
And, I don't know. I started making pointy things as soon as I could run the grinder without my dad knowing what I was doing in the garage. So, and then it's he's far better history of like knife making. I'm a machinist who makes knives. He's a machinist and also a really amazing knife maker, and so our skill sets kind of work together. So,
yeah, my parents had a lot of boys, and so they just said no knives for anybody. you know, we're just not going to do that. So
rebellious,
you know.
Now.
Yeah, my uncle.
I'm going to start a knife company.
Yeah, my uncle bought my first knife when I was 12, and you know, I just couldn't afford what I wanted to have, so I went to the thrift store and bought kitchen knives and used a Dremel tool and you know, started forging knives beside my parents' house and just slowly built equipment and built skills. And when I started, everyone was like, "You're doing what? What are you doing?" And so just kind of said, you know, something I'm interested in. And the online community was really great, being able to support that skill and being able to learn how to make knives. And then I became a machinist. I got a internship with NASA right out of high school.
Oh, nice.
And big brain, by the way, just, you know.
You know.
NASA things you wouldn't understand.
I mean, I always think about the guys who clean the toilets at NASA, and they're like, you know.
Yeah, I work at NASA.
Like, a lot of people can say that. Like, but, yeah, we built space parts and, you know, flight articles and and then Zach over here was like, "Hey, you know, you could machine things and also make money at the same time."
I hired him.
He hired me, and I left civil service to work for him, and that went horribly. No fault to Zach, but
that is not something we talk about on a podcast.
Yeah, can't go there.
Let's just say NCIS was involved.
Yeah.
You stole the Challenger, didn't you?
Yes.
Declaration of Independence.
Yes.
That was us.
Yep. So then, you know, Zach started working for Warsport.
You hear that?
And, you know, making guns. And, you know, eventually he hired me to come down and build guns with him and started making knives.
And, yeah. Like, so you worked for Warsport. Back into it. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, it really, you know, solidified my need to work for myself.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't even know what Warsport is.
Oh, my gosh. So, Warsport, we made really flat shooting green AR-15s.
Nice.
That's like a poorly explained movie, you know?
Yeah, poorly explain what you do.
They were really, really flat shooting. And it was largely because they were heavy and had a muzzle brake on them. But at the time, back in...
That was peak.
And they had the cool rail cut out.
We did. Yeah. We had the LVOA. And then... Yeah. So I came in after they had the initial concept, but they hadn't turned it into a production gun yet. And I ran their machine shop and was the director of manufacturing, which was a cool title. But whenever you have like six people under you, it's not nearly as nifty. and so... I stood up the ability to make stuff in-house. They had already purchased some equipment but didn't have the expertise. Hmm. So we stood that up. We stood up our barrel manufacturing and made a whole bunch of precision rifle barrels and all that kind of stuff. And then I got a job we're not going to talk about who I got a job with, but another big gun industry company. Worked there for a while and then went to Hudson Manufacturing, where we made the H9.
Really?
Yeah. So,
which is now all the talk of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because of
Daniel Defense.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So after Hudson went bankrupt, they bought the TDP, the data package, out of bankruptcy, and so then they got that and did a bunch of cool stuff to it and fixed some things. Hopefully, I hope that gun runs. It's going to be a pretty gun, so
it's a fantastic concept.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, but I think the important thing to level set with that specific concept is that it's a concept that's been around a really long time. Like the specifics of it and how the gun operates might be somewhat unique, but the idea of getting your bore axis low, take a Daniel Defense H9 and overlay it over a Steyr. And they're going to look real similar because that concept of get the barrel axis as low as you can has been around a while. the Steyr
AUG.
No, the M9. No,
they're little pistols with the triangle sights.
Yep. Yeah. The sights were a little wonky, but
yeah.
But the pistol's been around, and that concept has been around for a really long time. So it's neat to see it. I hope they do really well with it. So. And nice. That's a roundabout way. And then 2017 we started Dauntless. So.
Yes.
That's cool. I did not know that. Did you know that he was involved in Hudson and?
I knew you worked at a couple of those, so I didn't know about Hudson.
Don't yeah. you have one, don't you?
Yeah, that's in the box.
Cool. Nice.
I've shot it, but I don't shoot it much anymore.
That's cool. I don't.
Oh, really?
I don't have one. No. I mean, aside from being shorted because bankruptcy sucks, I also didn't get a gun, so I'm a little bitter.
Well, on that note, the podcast is over.
Anyway, about that.
Well, and that's, you know, honestly, Dauntless was... We started Dauntless because we were tired of working for people who might have a good idea but not have business sense, or might have business sense but had, you know, no understanding of, you stand a machine up to run production and it takes 4 days to get everything ready to go. Mm-hmm. You start running parts and then they say, hey, actually, we're going to do something else. And all, it's like, okay, all this time is wasted. All this prep is wasted, you know, but they're the boss. You know, we wanted to be that boss who said – you know, and when we started Dauntless, we actually had no intention of making knives. You know, we weren't sure with the aerospace background, with the firearms background. We wanted to do something, but we really didn't have the desire to make knives.
Yeah.
You know, Zach had been making knives for many years. I'd been making knives for many years. We never had a real passion to produce knives. And that kind of actually happened circumstantially.
Yeah. So we started up, and our original business plan, we wrote a big business plan and bootstrapping ourselves on this. And we said, okay, we're going to do help people reshore manufacturing. So we're going to do consulting to make people that already send a product overseas, give them the ability to bring it here. Yeah. And
our first job was doing that.
And our first job was with Wolverine Airsoft. We stood up their in-house manufacturing. And so if you have a Wolverine Airsoft gun, which they make some super high-quality stuff, a lot of their base process is stuff that we developed, and they've taken over years later. They're doing a great job, and their machine shop is...
They have Invictus Manufacturing. Their own OEM stuff now as well.
Yeah. So they do great stuff, and that's how we started was, you know, we were going to consult and then research and development in defense and firearms, and we're looking for a first product. And a friend of mine, Matt Helm, we were like, hey, we should make a knife with you. And he said, nobody wants my knives. And I was like, everyone wants your knives, and nobody can get them. And he's like, okay. So we licensed the design from him, and they sold out in, I don't know, it was like 3 days or something like that. In a little company that had, at the time, like 2,000 followers, and nobody knew who we were, but they wanted the Matt Helm knife. So we were like, I guess this is what we're doing now. And we haven't been able to touch any product except for knives since then. So
That's okay.
It's fine. It's cool. We love it. We love what we do.
Yeah.
It just wasn't the, you know, super specific long-term goal that we had worked. The long-term goal was to build a manufacturing facility and something sustainable that we enjoyed working for ourselves, and we used our long-term expertise in. But the knives was not specifically that product that we had decided to focus on until, you know, the demand is there and we're good at it. Not in like an egotistical way, but we're machinists that have spent our entire careers chasing the hardest parts, the most complex things, and the most advanced things, and we can just apply all those lessons to another part that just happens to be knife shaped,
right?
And it's worked really well. So.
And we tried really hard not to approach things necessarily from, you know, how everybody's done it in the past. You know, with our first contract, we talked on the phone with the contract, and Zach was like, yeah, well, we'll do the Kydex. And up until that point, we farmed out the Kydex. And so Zach is working a full-time job out of state. And all of this work, I'm doing all of this work. So we got off the phone, and I called him back, and I was like, what are you talking about?
I was like, we can figure it out.
He did. That's exactly what he said. And I was like, again, like, we are going to figure this out. But we did. You know, we went back to the drawing board, and instead of looking at it as how does everybody else do it, we looked at it from a manufacturing process. And as machinists, and how would we do it? You know, we built our own fixturing. We built our own system. You know, we make a really good product, but not because we were trying to design that product, but because we were trying to make a flexible system to be able to apply across the board. And for a lot of years, we tried not to be pigeonholed in knives. And honestly,
and we gave up.
We gave up. The benefit is we can offer to a customer the expertise of we make knives. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of people who are trying to scale up who send us a quote and then they're like, you know, our job shop down the street, they can do it cheaper. Sure. I'm sure they can.
Go for it.
Then. They can be made in China or Taiwan cheaper. Mm-hmm. But this is what we do. You know, we do a really good job at it. Mm-hmm. We're really specialized, but we do it really
well. And
we're
very special.
Hi, I'm Chris from Big Tech's
Ordnance. And I'm Ian from Big Tech's
Ordnance. And today we've got the weekly update. So first off, from Voltor is the classic MER upper receivers, right? So we've got them in foliage green, black, standard black. Those were my picks. What do you got over there?
For all the wheel gun enthusiasts out there, we've started carrying some Safariland Comp 3 and Comp 2 speed loaders for J frames and K frames. So if you guys need a good speed loader for all of your revolver needs, we got some. We have the new Streamlight Wedge XT also. These come in black and FDE. Great little task light. You know, drop your keys underneath the couch. You're looking for your burrito. Good little option from Streamlight. Comes with a little lanyard on it as well.
Solid price point on those. I'll have to reference the price point on
USB-C
those.
USB-C rechargeable, and it has a deep carry pocket clip on it.
Yeah, so option.
Looks great.
Coming up, there's a bunch of classes. We've got Paradox training. Going to be across the street at the range. Doing that the 27th. Not this weekend, but next weekend. Anyway, lots of training events coming up. We just also posted the Sons of Liberty.
Oh, yeah, the Armorers
class in May. It's up on the website. Anyway, thanks for watching.
Be safe.
Finger guns.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we care about our products. Yeah, you know? Yeah. We care about what we're doing. And
yeah.
We get to just make a knife.
You want to do a knife?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, we are doing one knife for someone sitting here.
Yeah.
It's not me.
No.
And you guys are already
married. I didn't know about it until I saw it here today, which is a lot of stuff from Kratos. I'm busy with Big Tech. So it's like, I was like, hey, what do you think about this? I'm like, oh, cool. It's like there's 1,000 of them sitting in the warehouse. Okay. Cool. Let's sell them.
We don't do, you guys don't do in half measures either. So.
No.
Yeah. 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 You got to go all out.
I don't like doing things halfway. It's no fun at all.
It's bandwidth too, man. Like a lot of it, I'm here for a lot of things. So he has more bandwidth to do stuff like that. And if he's having to consult with me on it, it's not helping his bandwidth.
Yeah.
You know, so like,
and then I help Chris with his bandwidth.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have.
But who helps?
You're my
him?
Best friend now.
Nobody helps me.
Who helps?
Oh, my therapist helps.
Yeah. Justin
helps Ian.
Josh,
yeah.
Everybody helps Ian. But that's so do we want to jump into that process? Like say somebody like Ike wanted to develop a Kratos knife. What does that process look like?
All right. So there's two ways to approach it. With Ike, the first thing I said was, do you want to dual brand something we already have, or do you want something from a clean slate, from the bottom up? You know, we designed something special and new for you. And we had a knife that was already in process that fit all of his wants and needs and desires, and that's our work knife V1. which is a Matt Helm design. We produce it. Everyone loves it. It's mm-hmm. super utilitarian. I've seen guys with these on their duty belts as their utility blade, or you know, in a bed of their truck for their overland gear or their hunting gear. Or I carry mine quite often, and it's from our first or second production run years and years ago. And it's just it's one of those blades that really stays in the rotation. So it's super useful. It's got a good form factor. The sheath is good. And it's all hammered out. And so whenever someone comes to me and they go, we want a knife, if it's A, someone that aligns with our business plan and our business direction, which Kratos and Ike and Big Tex, you guys align very well. You're in a space that makes sense to dual brand with. We offered a dual brand. And so we selected that model, start selecting colors for the colorway that match your branding or just something you like. We've had people pick some things that I don't necessarily agree with, but they thought were amazing. And they sold, so I'm going to let they knew their customer base. I'll leave that up to you. But he selected the colors that he likes. Ike and Maddie were, they sent me their brand book and we started matching things to it. And then normally this is for a future production run, and it just so happened that we had already had those blades in manufacturing. They hadn't made it to engraving yet, so we could add graphics. And then we went through what logo worked with our engraving equipment and the space provided. And then we ordered sheath material, and we started going. Those ones are just a pretty standard but very popular and high-end offering for us, which is the MagnaCut steel with a tumbled finish, Matt Helm jimping, and then the scales are Rhino Gray with, I think, a Tiffany Blue
it's
liner.
Tiffany Blue.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's real solid. It's pretty, but, man, it is a really – it's a worker.
Yeah.
And then the sheath, we're still hammering out some colors on that one. It's in a gray sheath right now that doesn't match the handles very well. And so that's kind of where we're figuring out the last of it. But to get back to the question, the dual branding normally goes something like that, depending on where they're starting in our production run. Sometimes people just come to us and they're like, next time you run these, please let me know. And we do that. We've done that with Audi Gear,
Tactical Distributors,
and a few others.
Dead Bird.
Yeah, Dead Bird mm-hmm. Society. Shout out to Paul. And
Amanda. And Amanda.
Not Amanda.
Is it Amanda?
Is it not Amanda? Amanda.
Yeah. Yeah. I met her last night. She's so sweet.
She is. She's. We talked about running quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about mini horses, so I don't know what you got. I don't have mini horses, by the way.
I don't have any horses.
I don't either.
Let alone
miniature ones.
I don't run. Yeah, that was terrible. You don't run?
Yeah.
No? I hate running.
Used to.
I ran a 50K 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, he hates it.
50K?
What shoes are you wearing?
When I'm running?
What are you running in?
My last running shoes, which I'm mostly through because they have 417 miles on them. They are North Face Vectiv Enduros, I think that's what they're called. And they work really nicely, but they don't have a Vibram sole.
Yeah.
And so I wore the bottom lugs off.
Yeah.
And then these ones are Merrell Test Lab Long Sky 2s, which are great, but they're not as cushiony as the other ones.
Yeah, cool.
So, anyway, yeah.
I try to run.
Oh, I'm terrible at it. Don't get me wrong.
You did a 50K.
Yeah. You're the only one in the room that's done a 50K in the last 14 days.
Yeah. Like, ever? I'm going to throw that out there. Ever.
So that's how, you know, a collaboration would work.
Oh, yeah. He's trying to get his back on track.
Sorry.
Yeah. Running shoes, though. I mean.
Yeah, I just don't care about running in any
It's like, shut up.
Okay, so.
No, Zach's like, you should go running. And I was like, you want me to live. So.
Even like running.
Yeah.
But yeah, so people will be, hey, when are you going to make Persians? Or when are you going to make hikers? Or when are you going to. And then we'll just slide them in and, you know, dual brand with them over that and give them a cool colorway, and they get to sell it, and everyone gets something they really
exclusive.
Like. Yeah, exclusive.
We did one with Blade HQ.
Oh, yeah, Blade HQ.
I saw
those
that.
Those were hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, those sold out. Well, the first one sold out in like 20 seconds.
With the
or
Ultima?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My neighbor got one and they were.
Yeah, so that one was really great. And then we did two more hikers that were exclusive and they took a couple days to sell out.
It took the weekend, like 2 days.
But after 20 seconds,
I know.
It's like,
it was a little bit of a letdown. Yeah.
And then if you want to do an OEM where you want you have a napkin sketch, you know, I drew
that's where
up.
We're going next.
Yeah, I expect
we're gonna do one from the ground up.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah.
Or even a production model that you've been making by hand. Like we have a lot of, you know, we worked with Matt Gaskell who has, you know, his Tanner model he's made by hand for years. And we did a production version of that where he had a nice model and we had pictures of ones that he'd made in the past. Like there's a wide range of people who are doing this. I worked from a piece of MDF board that somebody like cut out with a jigsaw and they were like this, but better.
We did. Not with a jigsaw cut.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
We used chisels on that one to get it real nice.
So what you do, if I'm imagining this correctly, so if you take, like, say I've been, like, taking this and doing a classic style knife build where I'm either cutting this out of another sheet, like spring steel, right? That was what we grew up doing, was taking saw blades, sawmill blades, and cutting them down, right?
L6.
Or forging it, heating up some metal and beating the shit out of it. But if I can only do two of those a day, you take the manufacturing process, apply your manufacturing process to it, and make the same, if not better, quality knife.
Yeah, so we productionize their model. And there's always concessions, or differences is really a better way of putting it, because a lot of times it's not better or worse than a handmade knife. Some handmade knives are just so impeccably perfect, but from one to the next, they're going to be different. So we just apply manufacturing, which is... or precision manufacturing, or whatever you want to call it, you're gonna need to turn that around.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
There we go. Works better that way. Yeah. I was looking at it. I was like, "Yeah, not really."
And that's something that people send us the picture, or they'll send us a prototype, and we'll say, "Okay, here's what we're gonna expect to see as far as concessions, and why it won't look exactly like this handmade one." We don't glue our handles on, you know, and a lot of handmade knives are going to have glued and pinned handles. And so we're like, hey, you all right with screws? Because if not, we're going to have to discuss some stuff. And, you know, most of the people are far enough into knife making that they know what to expect. And we try to communicate that. So there's so much that you can start from. Whether for dual branding purposes, it's a model we already have, or a clean slate design where you have no idea what you want, or a napkin sketch, or you've already had one made, or you've already made them, or you've made them for years, or you've had a different manufacturer make them. There's just so many different ways to approach it, and levels of completion. We really prefer to do knives that are complete and ready to go with a sheath and done and assembled, but there are people that they're a knife maker and they have their special sauce when it comes to sharpening. Yep. And so they're like, oh, I want to put the final edge on it. Hey, that's fine. We'll just take that out of the quote, just like any other manufacturer would do. And that's what we do. So
there are people who we make knives, but not sheaths. There are people who make sheaths, but not knives.
We don't do that. So don't ask me to quote your sheath. That one's grandfathered in.
Yeah.
I don't want to be a Kydex manufacturer.
Yeah, just to be clear about that.
Yeah.
Hey, you make any holsters? No, I'm just kidding.
This is needs to be kid friendly. That's what we do, and that's generally how it works. Is we just start from wherever they are and turn it into a production knife.
Cool. And so you can like basically select the steel, metal. The metallurgy of it, what it's made of.
Yeah.
Do you do heat treating? Do you do...
So we'll start with what steel do you want it to be made out of? And from the knife makers, they have an idea. From the people who aren't knife makers and want to have a knife made, they're like, they're about 90% of the time asking me, what's good?
Yeah.
High price point, low price point, you know, Magna Cut's at the top right now, and AEBL is at the bottom, or bottom price-wise, not really performance-wise. Finishes are another thing. You know, there's all these considerations when it comes to finishes. Everyone loves DLC because it's fancy, but it's not really the best finish for CPM 3V, whereas it is the best finish for if you want a Magna Cut blade that's black, you know. And then black oxide, you want this color? Do you want tumbled? Do you want, how hard do you want it? This is the spec we normally run at. And then they go, what kind of handles do you want? Do you have colors? Do you want a variety?
Do you want them to be textured? Do you want them to be, you know, it becomes, you know, Zach's job, and Zach's standardized a lot of it. Like, he's built a very complex spreadsheet. So if you order,
pretty proud of the spreadsheet.
Yeah, it's complex, you know, and it's relatively plug and play as far as being able to input all those things. But when somebody says, you know, I'm interested in maybe Magna Cut and 3V and maybe some Damascus, I'm thinking about these six different, like, and they're like, can you just whip up a couple quotes
all the time
for that? And he's like, you realize that's like 30 different quotes.
Yeah.
Like, and they're like, oh, that's fine. That's fine. It's not a big deal.
I had somebody ask, they said, all right, we'd like you to make knives for us. I was like, cool. I would love to quote knives for you. And he sent me his whole catalog. His catalog contained like 16 models. And then he wanted them each quoted out of a couple different steels with different handle materials. And I'm thinking permutation-wise, there was like 1,000 different permutations there.
Yeah.
and like that's one of the things that we try and offer on our end for our own products is being able to have, you know, you have, let's just say for just the V1, and there's a V1, a V2, a V3, and a V4 now. For the V1, you're looking at 4 different steels. You're looking at, within those steels, 2 different jimping styles for each one. You're looking at probably 4 to 5 different coating options across different steel options. Then you're looking at handles for all of those versions. Then you're looking at sheaths for all of those versions, 2 different versions of sheaths. And on those, you can build them out with whatever clip you want. So you might have a, you know, a discrete carry clip, you know, 2.1, you know, cloth grabber clip or an Ulta clip on there, whatever it is that you want, that it becomes this huge, huge list of options that, you know, we might never put the same knife together, you know, twice. We end up doing it because like everybody buys like what's hot at the moment,
yeah.
You know, but Zach's work there with getting all the quoting and working with the customers and trying to figure that out, like, it's truly a monumental task. Like, and I, you know, Zach is the driving force in Dauntless, moving forward. You know, I just make all of it. but if it weren't for Zach's efforts doing stuff like this and making the connections, like, we wouldn't have anything to make.
Yeah.
How many other people do y'all have on the team?
3.
Oh, cool. I was going to ask that question.
Yeah, we have one part-timer and then 2 other people that work for us full-time. It's actually my son. He turned 18, graduated from high school last year, and the next week he was in the shop.
Yes.
and then another guy named – we have 2 Ians, believe it or not.
Hey, so do we.
We have 2 Ians.
Do you?
Yeah.
Like, I got to check the percentage of people named Ian, because I don't think that there should be 2 Ians in a 5-person shop.
Yeah,
that's we're pretty close to that too.
Pretty close. I have a joke that I'm not even going to say. No, it's bad form.
I'm going to Google it.
The percentage of people named Ian.
Yeah. What's the chances of that?
I would be willing to bet that it's not 40%. Which is what our shop is.
Yeah. Probably slightly less than that. I would think so.
Continue.
Okay. Yeah. Where are we going with this? Ian's.
Yeah,
Ian's.
So
okay,
you got 5 people in the shop total.
Yep.
Yeah.
And how many are actually putting together knives when it's all said and done?
When it's time to, like, we don't assemble full time, but when it is time to do assembly, it's usually 3 of us.
Yeah.
And then we always have one of the Ians is always running production, because if Spindle stop, then You know,
when he stops coming
down,
in,
down the road, it's bad. So he keeps spindles running, and either most of the time he's making blades. Chris, when it comes to assembly, is usually the guy sharpening while myself, Noah, and other Ian will do assembly. Usually that's how it works. Sometimes my wife comes in and helps out.
Yeah. Her name Ian?
No.
Is there a female? Is there a female variant of Ian? Is there? Is it like
her name is Aaron?
Oh, that's
Aaron. Oh.
I have our fact: one out of every 436 baby boys, and one out of every 296,581 baby. Wait. Girls are named Ian in 2021.
Now, is that worldwide or just in the United States?
I'm guessing worldwide.
Okay, well, that's going to significantly skew that number.
Yeah, I didn't know Ian was a girl's name as well.
Could you also check, like, back to the 1980s and early 90s?
Yeah.
So, I mean, because that would be a lot
because that's more relevant information.
Yeah. That's the interesting I'm not part. Hiring babies.
Yeah.
Not yet.
But you
thanks,
do know what
labor laws. Yeah.
You do know what your chances are in the next 30 years of
right.
hiring some more Ians.
I'm going to be retired when that's relevant.
Ian will be doing the hiring.
Okay, interesting, interesting.
Do we see a spike?
Well, kind of. As of 2019, the name has been in the top 100 in the United States ever since 1982, peaking at 65 in 2003.
Oh, okay. So 2003? I mean,
20 years ago.
That's a 20. Yeah,
this is for all the unions out there.
Yeah. That's
so when you listen to the Big Techs podcast, you find all sorts of interesting
knives,
facts that
names.
You cannot live without.
Right.
Just
right.
like the Joe Rogan podcast, when he yells at the guy to pull up the whatever on the screen.
So we're basically JRE right now.
Yeah. Right here.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a cool dude.
Definitely. Yeah.
Seems like does he have one of your knives yet?
No. No. If I could find I'd send him one.
Yeah.
I mean, but say that with a little bit of consternation because like,
you don't want that.
Everybody and their brother probably sends him free stuff, right? Yeah. And I know he's had knife makers on the podcast before, at least one that I could think of. And yeah, that's great. I mean, absolutely phenomenal for our industry. But I don't want to be the guy just sending him something for his junk drawer. So,
yeah.
So,
if y'all ever did like the Forged in Fire, or you've been on there?
I did.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I was on Forge and Fire in season 8. I went on the 200th episode.
Oh, wow. Was that after you started working for him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That was
with
2 years. Yeah, we...
what year was that?
2000. It came out in 2022. Yeah,
okay,
2022. Cool. It aired in January of 2022, so two years ago.
And he won. I just want to point that out. Cool. Yeah. Absolutely lambasted the competition.
Lambasted. There's more SEO right there. It's going to be our top viewed podcast, probably.
Right.
I'm sure they're all really
it's
nice
on Netflix
people.
Right now.
I kind
so
of
check it out.
I felt sorry for them because I know how good he is.
I'm a classic overthinker, and like I got real in my head. Like I got really into it, and
knife making. He got into it.
After the first round, it was like, okay, this is mine to lose. I'm competing against me. Like, the other competitors were awesome.
Right.
But it was not in the same league. If I was competing against, you know, Master Smith, I think it might be a different story. But, you know, it was a really fun experience.
Go ahead and watch it. You'll understand. You'll be like...
We can watch it tonight.
Yeah. You'll be like, wow, that is an amazing knife that Chris made. And those other people on the same show?
That's awesome.
Well,
smoked.
Found my Netflix show. Yeah. I'm watching that.
Yeah, there's a local guy in the. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And he's very like humble, and I get to act egotistical when I'm bragging about him because I think he's awesome. So
yeah, he's your homie. You get to talk.
That's right. That's right.
So anybody thinking I'm being an asshole, first of all, I kind of am. But second of all, he's awesome. Go watch the show. You'll see I'm right.
It's going to be a good short there. So there's a – we have a Forged in Fire guy that used to – I don't know if he's still there because I haven't been to the Woodlands Farmers Market in a long time. Mm-hmm. But he would set up at the Farmers Market and sharpen knives. Like on a Saturday, you could just take whatever to him. you know, and I dropped off like a couple kitchen knives to him one time, and he did a really good job, and I got them back, and like I went like 3 or 4 weeks later, and I just had like pockets full of knives because he'd sharpen them for like $5.
Oh, yeah, man.
You know, like really quick. Like I'm fixing to spend 45 minutes with my kids walking around this.
Sure.
Farmer's market, I might as well get something out of it besides an overpriced duck. And so like I walk up and I'm talking to him and I start like dropping knives on the table, but I'm not a knife guy.
I was about to say
I'm not a knife guy. And I'm sitting there and he's like, okay, yeah, just come back. That's cool. I was like, I got one more, and I pulled my clinch pick out and he's like, where the fuck did that come from? I'm like, oh, it was right here in my hand. Like, just pulled. He's like, oh, wait, that's such and such. I was like, yeah. And we started talking about that. Anyway.
Not a knife guy.
Not a knife guy.
Pulled his clinch pick out. Right,
not a knife guy. Came back, and he's like, oh, no, dude, like, don't worry about like, didn't charge me for, like, the half a dozen knives I dropped on there just because he got to mess with the clinch pick.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, okay, cool. So I, like, dropped a 20 in his jar and walked off. But that was cool to interact with that dude, and like all he really wanted to do was make some money that weekend.
Yeah,
you know, sharpen his knives. I wasn't engaged.
Did he sharpen your clinch pick?
Yeah.
Why was your clinch pick dull?
Like
it wasn't.
I was gonna say, have you cut anything besides yourself with it?
Yeah, or it like wasn't. It's really dull sharp from now. Fucking stabbing
that,
people.
That was the V.
You haven't messed with a clinch pick unless you've cut yourself with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Oh
yeah.
I like, carried Matt Helm made me. Fist load, which was his version of the clinch pick, with permission when he made it from Craig Douglas. And so I carried that for quite a few years, and the only blood it ever saw was from me.
Yeah.
And like that, I'm convinced that you can't carry a clinch pick for an extended amount of time without drawing your own blood.
You gotta be very careful. And when you hand it off to people, like the first claim. Like, and I've seen people just cut their thumb. I'm like, hey, that's got a reverse edge. And they're like, oh, really? Ah!
Told you. I
carried mine for a while.
I did. I need to order one. That's like the one knife I do not own as a clinch pick.
I got three. You want to buy one?
Not a knife guy.
Yeah. I bought an Emerson Karambit on deployment. And, you know... And I got like, I'm honestly pretty good at flipping it. It cost me two ACU tops and a bunch of blood because I just like, you know, would flip it and then the karambit would be sticking out of my arm, cut through my uniform, and I was like, ow. Like, like at least two uniform tops were ruined on deployment because I would just flick it and twirl it and it would just right through the uniform top into my arm.
Good friend of mine he sent me a picture, and it's like this, and there's a Emerson Karambit sitting like this,
mm-hmm.
and coming out of the side of his finger.
That's not where that goes.
You can't park there. I was like, Justin, what's going on here? And he's like, it's stuck into the bone. And it was standing up by itself.
Oh, no. I definitely had one.
Oh man.
I definitely had one that was quite deep. It hit like the arm probably pretty close to that. And I was like, ow, okay, I'm done with this for a little bit.
Yeah,
this ouch.
Yeah.
Still have that knife, still carry it sometimes.
Yeah, we released the Dogbone K, and it's actually a really good size for kids. because it's a small package,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's especially, you know, like,
we're talking about kids,
you know,
here.
I would have given anything to have this knife as a 12-year-old.
Oh yeah.
You know, especially like in a deep carry sheath in your pocket, like you can carry
when you're
it.
A little kid, you
right.
want to carry
the problem
stuff in your
is
yeah.
if you send one of these to your nephew.
Yep. Yeah. Hypothetically.
He'll get it on a Friday.
Hypothetically.
And on Saturday, he will get 17 stitches in his hand.
It's a good lesson to learn when you're young, though.
Like, you know, knife safety is important.
Yeah.
Like, with kids, but, you know, when you're around real tools, like, you have to be careful with
it.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm mad but I didn't order one.
I guarantee you he's not going to do this again. So, you know,
we got to make more of them.
Yeah, we got to make more of these.
That's nice.
My wife thinks that the K in Dogbone K is for kids.
oh,
it's not.
Yeah.
But
it's for curs, by the way. Just so you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
The
that's cool. Go ahead for the kid's knife story.
Yeah, kid knife story. So I don't know how old I was. Very extremely young. And remember, I'm a '90s baby. And remember the like the suckers that you would hit the button and the sucker you would stick.
Oh yeah.
And the sucker would rotate. And but they had like the plastic clamshell on it that you need the jaws of life to get the plastic clamshell off. So I got one for I don't know Christmas, birthday, Hanukkah,
the jaws
Easter.
Of life, or
the both okay. the sucker okay. and the jaws of life
to open the sucker.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. So I'm like, I can't fucking open this. And my dad's like, hey, go get my pocket knife. It's on the counter. Be careful. That's the like, be careful. And he's
not.
We
today.
Were. I was in the dining room. Knife was in the kitchen. I was supposed to walk the knife back over to dad, hand it to him. No, I open the knife because I'm an idiot. Grab it by the blade. yeah, I'm not fucking kidding. Proceed to then realize. I cut myself, and my dad literally just told me
to be careful.
So I'm like, I'm not telling this guy that I just fucking cut myself. So I don't remember if I closed the knife or opened the knife, but I have a handful of blood
yep.
that I'm like this, and I just like holding back tears, hand my dad, he, you know, come back into the dining room, and I'm like, here you go. And he's just like, what's wrong? And I go like this.
I have a handful of blood.
Just open my hand and proceed to bawl because I have a gash across my palm.
Yeah. My nephew was just sitting on the couch very quietly.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, this is not normal for him. He's a bit of a bruiser. And just sitting there quietly was like, uh-oh. And my brother-in-law was there and you know, he ended up having to go to the emergency room for stitches. They found the bathroom that he tried to clean up first.
Looked like a murder
because,
scene.
Yeah, because, like, I called him. It was for his birthday, and I called him, and I was like, look, this is a tool. This is not a toy. Like, it's very sharp. Like, only use it when your mom says you can. Careful. Like, be really careful.
Be careful.
Be so careful. I literally said, don't put your fingers on the side of the sheath when you pull it, and he put his fingers around it and pulled it out. But the bathroom was a little bit of like a, you know.
Yeah, because he probably went,
yeah. And it was just, it went everywhere.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
So I felt really bad, like a little bit like proud.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
that, no. you know, but also
you
just
helped
like.
Helped him in this formative experience.
I just cut my nephew, like.
Like, yeah, it was great. I'm just like, knife. Thanks. Here, what?
I can remember getting like a K-bar when I was like 8. Like my grandpa
had a
was
great
like
childhood.
Yeah, like and like I've had a pocket knife my entire life, and like just
you never grabbed the handle or the blade, and
every time I've cut myself has been you knew better than that. Like I was cutting at an angle that I shouldn't have. You know, I cut this finger, the side of this finger off when I was chopping onions one time. You know, it's all stupid stuff that I should have knew better because I should have been careful, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I had a great childhood. I mean, like, that was like old timer pocket knife, you know, carried a knife all during school because that's what you did in the country.
You're so old.
Yeah.
They let you carry knives at school.
We had guns in our cars, too.
Did you have a shotgun in the back
window?
Yeah,
we did. As long as you put
what
it.
What time
behind.
Do I have to put you to bed tonight?
Early.
All right, back to the nursing home.
But
okay.
Yeah, like I can and like custom knives. We had knives all.
He's not a knife guy.
Not a knife guy. I've got a video I'll show you after this that shows that I'm not a knife guy.
Okay. All right.
But I am a knife guy. Yes. This.
He's admitted it.
This is the podcast.
That's the first step.
That's
so
the first step. We're proud.
We'll have to. We'll have to. Do you ever do any like kitchen cutlery?
No.
Do you ever
do
that?
No, we really don't.
And so, this is a discussion of brand and brand positioning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you guys can appreciate this. Even though we got into knives as a part and as something that we wanted to make because we thought it was a cool thing, and not being a laid out in our business plan, what we've come to realize and very purposefully is that we have a set of what people expect out of our knives.
Yeah.
They expect utilitarian, high quality, and a few other things, very usable things. And we don't stray from that a lot. We do a little bit when we do daggers and stuff like that, and the Musashi is maybe a little bit outside of the normal usability, but it's still usable. But kitchen knives are a whole different segment. And so in order to do kitchen knives really well, you've got to manufacture a little bit differently than we currently do. Now, we could figure that part out, but it doesn't really align with our value. Our value proposition isn't really in the kitchen.
Yeah.
If that ever happens, it'll have to be down the road when we can be very purposeful about what brand positioning we're using. We've seen a few other knife companies just jump straight into kitchen knives, and it's worked well for some of them and not as well for the others.
Yeah.
We don't want to dilute that brand.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to make a Dauntless energy drink anytime soon.
Right.
We've seen people do that. And it's
a good name, though, the Dauntless
energy. It is a great name.
Yeah, Dauntless energy.
But, you know, and that's we're slowly trying to expand that out to, you know, the scalpel, the Surgeon is the first knife that my mother ever said, you know, I want one of those.
And she'll cut
Are those out yet?
They are on the cusp.
Okay.
They're through manufacturing. The last of them are through heat treat.
Those are sharp little bastards.
Be
careful with that.
Yeah. They are very sharp.
Go up and down the blade, right?
Yeah.
God, don't even jump.
Give it to Ian. He knows how to hold them.
Yeah.
Here, let me show you guys.
And those are, you know, those again are fall back into that
utilitarian.
Yeah. That would work as a field scalpel. It would work. There was one guy who was like, this is going to be perfect for mushroom hunting.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I can
see that.
My mom wants one for gardening.
Yeah.
My mom actually cooks. Her favorite kitchen knife is a Rapala fillet knife.
Nice.
Because it was sharp.
Yeah.
She was like, I need a sharp knife. And I handed her that. And she was like, so she buys, like, she goes and buys cheap Rapala.
Yeah.
Fillet knives for in the kitchen. That she was like, this is something that I want, you know. And again, that's we've been talking about making a scalpel for many years, but just like when we started the business, you know, we didn't want to come into the scene with, you know, we make ARs, you know, everybody and their brother makes ARs.
Yeah,
we want to be able to have actual a value to add to the industry, and. You know, we think that our products do that.
Yeah. Based on good design and good materials and good manufacturing process. Yeah.
Are you guys putting like a...
No, don't even ask that.
No,
okay, I'm sorry.
I'm sure somebody will aftermarket. Everybody is asked.
Yeah, everybody wants inserts for it.
Well, it makes sense to not to, because if you're, you know, things covered in blood because you just skinned a deer with it, or it's covered in mushroom juice, like, I don't want spitz underneath the handle.
I'm sure that somebody is going to make aftermarket scales. There are people who make aftermarket scales for our knives, which I find awesome and yet also kind of ridiculous because of the number of scale options that we have.
Mm-hmm. What's the sheath going to look like on these?
So I'm going to do a small sheath that can be used for, you know, if you just want to toss it into your tackle box or use a pull chain on a necklace type deal. And then I'm going to do like a medium and a full deep carry. And then we'll have the Chattanooga Leatherworks sheath as well.
Nice.
So that
we really want to be able to, you know, it would fit on a, you know, on your vest.
And we're going to make a low profile one that fits in a single molly.
Single molly slot.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Right. Yeah. Because that on a chest rig behind some magazines is going to be awesome.
Is going to have a
this is a deep carry sheath with
strap cutter too?
No.
That has an edge.
It's a knife.
Yeah.
It is a knife.
You can cut anything you want with it. So can you talk about the Pineland series?
Yeah, that's actually a good one.
Yeah.
All right, so.
You have a Pineland.
Oh, yeah.
I have a Pineland.
You have a hiker.
Yeah.
Got a Pineland hiker.
Do we have any in our backpack?
Am I the only one that doesn't have a Pineland?
I don't.
Apparently. Should we do this?
You have to line it up for your arm so that you...
It'd be really funny if it cut the cord on your headset.
That wouldn't. That's an expensive headset.
Okay, so Pineland. A couple years ago, Matt came to us, and he had this really cool finish that he had that Vital Manufacturing had done on a aluminum frame for one of his 2011s. And he's like, "I love this finish. You guys should make scales out of aluminum."
Yeah.
And I said, "Yes, but you know, if you go down the rabbit hole of we're now anodizing aluminum scales, where does it end?"
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, another customer for you.
Yeah, I'm going to start an anodizing shop.
Why?
Because everyone bitches about anodizing in the industry, and everyone does it like asshole, so I'm going to actually do it good. I'm going to call it Ian's Anno.
Ian's not an asshole. Do it good anodizing.
Yeah, there we go.
Whole ass belts.
Yeah. Have you ever been in an anodizing shop?
Yeah, like, Chris was saying something about the EPA.
They're awful.
Well, whatever.
You literally dip metal in acid.
Okay.
We could anodizing
aluminum.
So
we could take acid and then anodize.
I used to have a boss who would say, "We take raw material and add value." And so he would walk away and we'd be like, "We take Valium and add raw material." We just mess up his saying all the time. And then he heard about it and it was angry. So Matt said, "You know, you should make aluminum scales and have them anodized." And I said, "Well, if you just are anodizing aluminum scales, it opens up this huge thing. Where, okay, I want them anodized purple, and I want them anodized blue, and I want them and so, like, we would end up making, you know,
more variations.
A whole bunch of anodized. And also, anodized aluminum isn't a particularly good material for a grip because it gets slippery when it's got oil on it or blood, and it gets cold when it's cold outside. It gets hot when it sits on the hood of your truck.
Like, it's heavy.
It's heavy. There's reasons that it's not a perfect, but it is tough as nails.
Yeah.
Aluminum nails, anyways. But it was a really cool finish that looked like color case hardening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we were looking at it, and I said, "Well, let's see if we can find a way to utilize this in a way that's interesting and has some level of history or some level of significance." And Dauntless Manufacturing is in Asheboro, North Carolina, which is smack dab in the middle of a fictional country called Pineland. Mm-hmm. And Pineland is part of oppositional force training for the final part of some special forces courses that have a ton of history based out of Fort Bragg. And if you want to, you can Google Pineland and you'll get some
Robin
results.
Robin Sage.
That's
yes. So yeah. Robin Sage takes place oftentimes within about 10 miles of our shop.
Yep.
And I have friends who have volunteered there. I have friends who have gone through it on the military side. And given that we are in Pineland, we decided we wanted to do something that was based on where we are geographically and that it's an important piece of military history, current and historically. And so we wanted to make something that was unique and not just sell the shit out of it. So what we did is we developed the Pineland series, which the blade steel is really unconventional. It's 5160, which is what truck leaf springs are made of. So if you were scrounging to make a blade in the woods as an oppositional force and you found an old chassis, you could probably make a blade out of a piece of 5160. And it's a really great blade steel. It just rusts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if you're
tough,
not careful.
Tough as actual steel nails.
Yeah. It's super tough. And so what we did is we just selected a configuration that is unique completely to the Pineland series, which is 5160 blades that are not treated after heat treat, so they still have the coloration. The aluminum anodized scales, which is a finish that even though this is made to look like it, you could see in something like that. And then woodland sheaths. And so that's we only sell the woodland sheaths on those knives. We only sell those scales on those knives, and we only sell 5160 blades on those knives. So you can't
and
get
we only do how many.
And so I'm getting there.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. And then the other interesting part about it is they're serialized and they never repeat. So the very first one was a Matt Helm Persian Pineland. Mm-hmm. And there's about 30 of those. And then we did Dog Bones, and there's about 30 of those. And then we've done Work Knife V2s, and there's about 30 of those. And then Hikers, there's 30 of each variation there. And then we did the Musashi, which is probably the coolest one. They look amazing.
Yeah.
And so they just continue in the series, and they're all individually marked and serialized, and you'll never get, you know, there won't. People ask me all the time, when are you going to put Dogbone Pinelands back in stock? Never. Like, they don't exist. They are no longer going to be made by us. And we don't limit production on almost anything. We literally make as many knives as we can because it's a production knife. Mm-hmm. But the Pineland, it's turned into a thing that people really appreciate and like. And it's really cool geographically for us. And if you drive around rural North Carolina, close to where we live, you'll see some strange signs here and there. There's a nondescript building beside one of the back roads close to us that's got a brown sign outside of it that says Pineland. And then there's a whole bunch of like radio antennas coming out of this ramshackle shack. So cool stuff if you know what to look for. And guys way cooler than me and Chris that are doing awesome stuff and have been in those parts of the woods for a really, really long time. I love to be just like some tangential part of it. We don't market them heavily. I don't post a ton of pictures of them on our Instagram. The people that know about them know about them.
Because you send a little note in the knives, too, to describe it.
Did
don't
I?
You?
I don't I think so.
Maybe it's on the description.
Oh, maybe on the description. Okay, yeah. It's on the description.
Yeah. And I try and lay it out. I'm not very wordy when it comes to the descriptions. If you look on our website, there's not a ton of information there.
Knife, it's sharp.
Yeah, you can use AI for that, too.
I can. I have, yes. I think when I wrote the hiker description is when the first one I used AI on. But yeah, they show up. They sell out. The only one that hasn't been popular was the Pineland Pakal. It's a niche knife, Pineland, and then being the Pakal is also a niche variant. Not everyone got that one. That's okay. I think I still have some in stock, which is really strange.
Oh, wow.
But
I grabbed the Hiker. Like, I've been wanting a Pineland for forever, and then the Hiker, that came out. I'm like, oh, I got to have that. And then y'all had some Pinelands in stock. I'm like, boom, done.
Yeah.
Is there like a crazy secondary market for those?
Some of them go for stupid money. In my opinion, stupid money. Mostly production knife. I expect secondary market to be at or close to retail. That's not always
the
case.
They are in stock.
Yeah, the Pakals are in stock, yeah.
We see a lot of your knives at like various charity events as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, they're always popping up.
Is there like a, do you know of one like, what's the most one has went for at charity?
I don't know. There was,
Shop Show probably had a pretty big one.
I don't know who bought it and how much it went for. So we donated 2 to Shop Show.
Me and Gerbs were bidding on those.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, from Badger.
And then we donated 1 to the SOCF auction last year. And we have 2. I literally set them aside to donate this year, and I missed the deadline. And so I felt like an idiot. So sorry about that. But I don't know. I know that the one last year at SOCF, I think it went for $750.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Which is super awesome. I love seeing it. We try and donate to good charities when it happens.
I definitely see the support out there. So that's really cool to see from like, you know, because it's consistently. It's not just like here and there. It's like we see them popping up quite a bit. So.
Yeah, yeah.
That's cool, man. I really like that. I think the first time, weren't y'all like watching for a drop one time at work?
I was.
And were y'all like, I got one.
Probably the and dog. Probably my Pineland dog bone.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Or my V2 work knife when you guys brought those back.
Yeah.
And we're up to, with the V4 is the most recent.
Yeah.
The V4 is the most recent Pineland, and I think we're up to like 320 in the serial numbers.
Yeah.
Like, there's only 320 Pinelands out there, you know.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I think that once the market kind of catches on to them, it's going to get kind of crazy. I saw somebody traded a Musashi Pineland and a Persian Pineland in the owner's group. And two really great customers of ours who have just been great, really supportive from early on. And one guy was like, hey, I'm looking for a Persian. I have this Musashi. And then they did the deal. But to see in the comments, someone was like, which one or what's the serial numbers? And it turned out that the serial number on the Pineland Persian was 8.
Cool.
And I was like, you might want to hold on to that, because I do think sooner or later it's going to take off.
Yeah.
Maybe that. Well, maybe it won't. I don't care. I think it's really great.
I think it's a cool project.
I think it's one of those things that's been really fulfilling and interesting.
It's cool. So.
And you never know where it's going to go. Like, we worked with Phil
Swanson.
Phil Swanson.
Oh, yeah.
To design a blem line, you know, where we can mark our crossbones. Mm-hmm. He built out a logo for us. And so anything that's got a cosmetic, you know, there's nothing functionally wrong with it, but there's a cosmetic issue with it. You know, we'll mark that as a crossbones. And
now people
are like,
they're like, oh, it's a crossbones that just came up for sale and they got to have it. And so the secondary is just so crazy.
Yeah.
So weird.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where can people find you? On Instagram?
Yep.
The internet?
Instagram, Dauntless_manufacturing. Our website is dauntlessmanufacturing.com. We sell most of our knives direct to consumer, although we dual brand and sell through other people sometimes. And Facebook, we've got a page there. If you're an owner, join our owners group. There's my plug. Yeah. You guys are already in it, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You're on TikTok.
I am on TikTok.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, it's terrible. Thanks. I hate it.
Yeah. Hey, we're on TikTok.
Yeah.
I fixed and follow you on TikTok.
Oh, nice.
Dauntless Manufacturing, I assume?
I think so.
Some variation.
Are you on LinkedIn?
Personally, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're trying to work on.
Do you know how to use LinkedIn?
Not really.
Oh, okay.
I'm working
Chris
on it.
Chris does.
Yeah.
He's looking for a job.
Oh.
I know who you were talking to last night, motherfucker.
You were talking to.
We need to talk.
Don't make it. I've already talked about a male issue right now, and he's going to ask me about that afterwards. Don't stress Ike out any.
Sorry. I was supposed to be quiet about that.
I trusted you.
You cut my finger off right there. And like, that's what I get for talking about somebody else.
Pull out some John Wick.
So let me go follow you on TikTok right now.
Well, thank y'all for coming out, man. This was really cool.
Appreciate you having us.
Sit down and nerd out on some knives for a little bit. I know Ian's over there living his best life.
Yeah, it's been a good day.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
One of four.
Looked at new revolvers and talked about knives. Like, all right, I'm going to bed after this.
Whose revolver?
The new Smith J frame.
Oh, man.
Oh,
it's hot.
If you're watching this podcast and you're interested in revolver classes, we're going to have DB.
Hopefully.
At the range soon.
Hopefully. Who?
Nice.
Daryl
Blokey.
Okay. You said DB. I thought DeBethencourt. I don't know if I've ever taken with any revolver stuff with DeBethencourt. He's pretty good.
Yeah, it was cool to hang out and talk about the new revolver with nice. Daryl on the floor. And he's like, oh, Chris, how about? Yeah, so it was cool. I now follow you on TikTok. And if you've been listening to this very ADHD podcast today,
squirrel.
I really appreciate you following us and tuning in to wherever you're listening to this at. Leave us a review. Drop a comment in the comments on YouTube, please. And if you haven't already followed them, check out Dauntless Manufacturing on all the internets.
All of them.
Yep. All the internets. All and what season and what episode of Forge and Fire?
Season 8, episode like 40, but it's the fans' choice, the 200th episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
On Netflix right now, I believe you can find that. So, dudes,
so
glad I met y'all last night, and we actually got to sit down and talk.
Yeah,
where we weren't crowded and being harassed by people
over everyone.
Yeah, talking over everyone, especially Paul from Dead Bird. That dude.
That guy. Gosh, he just keeps on talking.
Anyway, thanks for watching and tuning in.
Don't grab my spider handle. Or by the blade.
Grab the handle. Now I know why it was so confusing.
Be careful out there.
Hit the button. With my hands.